Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
There you go. Hello and welcome to... Oh, go on. Tell me, what are you saying?
So I was just saying, sit up, Yanni. Looks very, very low today.
You should have got this, the... What's it called?
The cushion.
The pillow. Oh, the cushion. Do you want to go get the cushion?
No.
You're going to sit like that?
I am, yeah.
You can put your knees on the chair. Because my kid, she sits on the chair with... on. Yeah.
Good evening, ladies.
So, if you lean forward and he leans back.
What if I do that? Same.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that.
Is that better?
Yeah, but yeah, your posture is perfect.
I'm going to have a backache by the time the show finishes. But yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I'm going to straighten my back out just like this. See, the joys of live streaming. Nothing. None of this is really scripted anymore. I don't think it is anyway. Not when it comes to us three. It's just when we have guests, we're more. More relaxed and more, whatever we are. I was about to swear as well. Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear, Youth Energy and Save Association. I'm your host, Del. This is Yannickis, and Rodri is here as ever. Gents, great to have you all back. The banter begins.
Thanks.
The banter brigade. Hmm?
You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I was before the show started, but yeah.
Do you trim your nose hair?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. Hmm.
Do you use a machine or?
Yeah, machine, yeah.
You pluck them?
Depends
on your mood. If United lose, you pull them out with your bare hands.
Usually take my nose out when United lose. But thank God that's been a while now. So I'm getting a haircut. Not that
it
matters on a show, but yeah, I'll
you
do
need it. It. United haven't been making you pull your hair out recently, so you're right in that sense now.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Just good. Rod, welcome back, my friend.
Yeah, I'm good. You okay, fellas? Yeah,
all good. All good.
Good,
can't,
mate.
Can't complain. I was about to ask you again what that T-shirt you're wearing is, but you explained it earlier, so clearly I should be listening.
Yeah, it's state of origin, Queensland Rugby League in Australia.
Are they any good?
Yeah. They're better than the team they play against, New South Wales. Controversy.
For our Australian listeners or wherever they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't get them mixed up with New Zealand because that make me look completely stupid. Or Austria, what's it called? Dumb and Dumber. I'm from Austria. Throw another shrimp on the barbie. Right, let's talk football.
It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
Rodri's disappeared. He has a few bits to do, so we can do this.
We've done this before, haven't we?
We've done this on our JT club, haven't we?
I mean, was it last day of the season, wasn't it?
Was it last day?
Yeah, it was the last day, yeah.
Yeah? I can't remember that far back, mate. I remember the other week when we did it with Linton, when we just disconnected, and the next thing you know, Rodri's like,
we're better than these.
We're better than these. Don't think we can hear that.
We heard that three times back. Can't argue with them.
They did a good job.
Kept us going.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So, it's as you were at the top of the table, as every team in the top six won at the weekend. Man City, their 5-0 win over Crystal Palace put the Eagles in further danger, while 10-man Spurs held on to beat West Ham 3-2 at the London Stadium. Mm. It's weird. Having West Ham,
doesn't go right, does it?
Bowling ground, Upton Park, London Stadium. Anyway, you saw the City Palace game. I hope you did, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, you did. Well, look, you and I know Palace had one or two chances, but as expected, it was one-way traffic for most of the game. The thing is, we kind of saw this result coming, didn't we?
It was a team in form against a team that can't defend, can't score goals, can't win, sat their manager after four games. Banker result of the weekend for me, City to beat Palace. It was inevitable.
Took the time to score, didn't they?
They did. But once the first one went in, the floodgates opened second half, and Benteke as well was a miss for Palace. He's gone off with ligament injury. We still don't know how kind of serious that is as well. He'll probably miss the United game Saturday as well. And I mean, we were talking about Palace earlier on. Who's going to score that? I mean, they haven't scored any goals, but who's going to score goals for them now? Who's going to replace Benteke? You know, Zaha's injured as well. Townsend's not really hit the heights this season.
He's not going to get 15, 20 goals from midfield, is he?
No, he's not. No one else is scoring goals. They're in massive, and they've got Hodgson as a manager. They're in disarray, Palace. I mean, I won't be surprised if they scored against United on Saturday. It's just so slow.
It'll be 4-6-0 system, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it has to be.
They can't even play Fosu Mensah either, and he's been one of the best players.
That's right. They're in massive trouble. But as for City, it's impressive at the moment, I think. You know, they've won again tonight. They're not conceding any goals. All right, the opposition hasn't been great lately. Mm. That, you know, take away Liverpool, where Liverpool had 10 men.
Mm.
But this 3-5-2 system seems to be working well for them. They're getting the best out of their defenders at the moment. You know, they're attacking with their wing backs, and the strikers are scoring goals as well. So it's good times for City at the moment.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned their strikers. I'm going to put this question to both of you. Now, we know that they boast an impressive pool of attacking talent, and they seem to be relying a lot less on Aguero these days, especially to get them big goals. Now, if you look at Sterling and Sane, they've been absolutely first class this season, haven't they, so far?
Sane especially for me. I'm not a massive Sterling fan. I think he's too hot and cold. He's too inconsistent. For me, he's not strong enough. I'm a big fan of Sane, though. I think he's a brilliant young little player. He's got pace. He's direct. He beats plays. He scores goals. He gets back. He defends as well. Goes past the fullback. Sane's got a bright future. If it's not at City, or, you know, maybe back in Germany or whatever else, or a bigger club, but. Big fan of Sane. Mm.
Well, Rod, you know about wingers, mate. I mean, he's not a one-trick pony, is he? He's got a lot in his locker, and he's still young. How is he? 22, 21, if that?
Yeah, so very young.
Yeah, he's been impressive, very impressive. And I agree with you, with Sterling. He's a bit hot and cold for me, but yeah, Sane, and he's not really played a lot. He's been on the bench a lot. So, but when he has played, yeah, he's very impressive. But you know, you've got. David Silva as well have been impressive, and De Bruyne, he was impressive as well. So all the front six of them are firing on. And he wasn't even playing; he was on the bench. So
That's right.
But like Jan says, you can't really be too much into that of Crystal Palace, because you know they're struggling at the minute. Even though the first 20 minutes. They could have got a couple of goals. Loftus-Cheek could have had a good chance, and he could have probably won. They had the chances that they need to be taken at this time. And, you know, when they're in trouble, they need to be taking these chances to get them, because, you know, City punished them in the second half because they took them to the sword.
That's right. Now, Rod, Spurs inflicted City's first defeat last season by constantly pressing high up the field, forcing them to make mistakes. Now, when you see teams like Palace defending in numbers and then being on the receiving end of a hiding, surely it makes more sense to follow Spurs' blueprint.
Yeah, it does. But when you're stuck in your ways like Rodgson, I don't think he's ever played that way. So I think you're not going to get that if you were appointing Rodgson. If you go a different way, then maybe you would have got that. But you're not going to get that Rodgson. And you know, when your back's against the wall and the confidence is low, they're just going to get in shape and try and do the simple stuff, and it's just not working out for them. And they're getting absolutely torn to pieces, and confidence is low. And like Jan says, there's who they're going to play up front and who they're going to get in the goals, because you know they're in deep trouble, especially with the games that are coming in the next two or three games, and you can't see them winning any of them.
That's right. And I'll briefly mention Spurs for your question. They haven't the win. Against West Ham wasn't very convincing, although it's another win on the road. Do you think they showed character to hold on for the win?
I think it's one of them games. If you ask the Spurs player, I think it's one of them games you play and you think we're never going to win, we're never going to lose this game. I think they had another gear to go up to, and I just think it was, even though West Ham did well coming back into it, I just thought Spurs were, even though it got a bit airy at the end, last 5 minutes, which you can do. I still think they were in control of the game and could have gone into another gear and possibly got more.
Yeah, that's right. The thing is, I was disappointed with West Ham, their reaction, especially to Spurs going down to 10 men. There was no urgency. It just seemed there was no industry, there was nothing. Many players, for me, looked very disinterested. Do you agree?
I agree. Reason being, we know the game, how much it means to West Ham, especially the fans against Tottenham. We know the rivalry and everything else. For the players not to perform, for me, I've said this about West Ham, start of the season. Bilic is in trouble for me. He's going to go sooner rather than later. I don't think the players are performing for him, for me personally. His signings haven't really worked out. And it seems like there's always injuries at West Ham as well, at key times and key players where he's, to be fair to him, he hasn't had the set of 11 to kind of play with all the time. He keeps chopping and changing because of the injuries. And Arnautovic getting suspended and silly suspensions like that. But I think there's something not right at West Ham. And for me, it's the manager, it's the owners.
Yeah.
There's coherence, if that's the right word. There's nothing there for me to say that, you know, all is rosy at West Ham. Something's not right for me personally.
Do you know what? It might sound silly, but I don't think it's any coincidence that it started when Payet decided that he wanted out. Because from when he said, I want out, and they sold him in January, they just went downhill. Mm. They haven't found that player. Because let's be honest, he had a fantastic first season and he was the man for them.
Yeah.
When a team like West Ham lose a star player that can create so much, that can give the fans a boost, that can give the, you know, it resonates through the rest of the team, they haven't found that person to replace him yet.
If he's deflated the squad, is the morale.
I think so, yes, because as I said, the players that they brought in, first of all, to replace him, like Snodgrass, okay, he's fantastic at dead balls, but he's not
Payet.
That's
it, yeah.
You know,
Lanzini is the only one that can make him sick.
I agree.
And he hardly plays at
least. I agree. And this is confusing. Well, right? I mean, is he injured? Yeah. Because I personally thought that if Liverpool were to sell Coutinho, he'd be the perfect man.
Yeah, I agree.
He'd be the perfect man because he's got everything that you need for a creative midfield. And actually, if he's got injuries, then
and it might cost a lot of money as well.
Not at all. But going back to Bilic, he moved it to 4-3-3 and he's looking at playing Hernandez wide right.
It's not going to work.
It's not.
Hernandez is a fox in the box. He needs to play as a center.
Precisely. And for me, this leads on to another thing, being Andy Carroll. I cannot understand what teams or the media see in this guy. When he was at Liverpool, I thought, yeah, he's young, he's got everything going for him, you know, and he's at a big club, he's at the stage that he can perform. Obviously, it didn't work out. But yet, he's still constantly being selected. For what? Okay, he's got a physical presence.
That's why.
He's not a prolific goalscorer yet.
No.
That's why, but, you know, okay, look against Spurs. Again, perfect example. Spurs are down to 10 men, right? You've got Andy Carroll up top. I'm not trying to be funny, but the only thing you can realistically do is lock the ball to him. And did they do that?
No.
All they were doing is playing it side to side, and Spurs were just happy with just sit back and say,
okay, you're not going to get the best out of Carroll playing like that. You play too short, that'd be like Peter Crouch. You've got to put the ball in the air.
Yeah.
If you're not going to put the ball in the air, you might as well just leave him on the bench.
Well, look at the goal that made it 3-2. Perfect ball.
Yeah.
Perfect ball. And Kiat, fantastic header. Yeah. Again, they didn't do that enough. And I actually thought, when the Spurs went down to 10 men, I thought, you know, West Ham got a chance here. Not to win it, but to pull it level. But, I don't know, whatever. Well, look, going back to the red card with Aurier, I feel he was rightly sent off. It was a second yellow card. The thing is, I'm actually not convinced he's good enough for the Premier League. I mean, at this moment in time, he's reckless. He gets worked up easy, as we saw at the weekend. Personally, I think his lack of discipline is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys see anything special in him, Rod?
It's early to say. Where did he come from again?
Paris Saint-Germain.
PSG.
Yeah, it's difficult to say this because he's coming to the Premier League, and the French league is just chalk and cheese. And he's gone from driving a Peugeot to driving a Ferrari. It's just under a mile an hour. It's going to take time for the lad, but you know, it's people target him, so he needs to sort that discipline out. And because the second challenge, it was in the middle of the park. It was really. You know, he needs to get speed of things very quickly, or you know he's going to see a lot of times on that bench because you know it's a quick game over here.
He's got that in him though, hasn't he?
Yeah,
very indisciplined player. You know, his disciplinary record over the years. He's not the nicest of fellas as well off the pitch. So I think he'll struggle. I think once maybe Trippier comes back, he'll nail that spot ahead of him.
Oh yeah,
I don't think he'll start ahead of him.
I think Trippier is their number one fullback anyway.
I agree.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they were happy to part with Kyle Walker. So yeah, let's see. Well, Manchester United ground out a 1-0 win at Southampton, while Liverpool and Chelsea were victorious in the Midlands. nice to see Stoke putting a performance against Chelsea like they did against United. A bit too easy for Chelsea, wasn't it?
Always is when Chelsea goes to play Stoke, isn't it?
Yeah.
It seems that Stoke turn up against maybe United and Arsenal. But against Chelsea, it's like a different ball game, isn't it?
Chelsea are their bogey team.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it, isn't it? Chelsea are Stoke's bogey team. They can't beat them.
Great hat-trick from Morata. Mm. He's settled in really well, Morata. Yep. He's done a lot better than what I thought he would. He's kind of exceeded my expectation of him. I thought he might.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I thought coming from Spain, all the hype with Costa, can we replace Costa, and you know the problems with Chelsea, so to speak, at the start of the season, and him coming in not really having a pre-season as much. He's hit the ground running and he's learning the Premiership as well. So if he's doing what he's doing at the moment and still learning, when he learns the Premiership, he's going to be even more deadly than what it is at the moment. He's a natural finisher, Morata.
Yeah.
But he needs, for me, he needs to work on his game. He needs to become more stronger. He doesn't hold the ball up well for me. And, you know, defenders have started to read that. But as for Chelsea, it was comfortable. I didn't see anything. I know Stoke at home, but... This was Chelsea.
Ryan was on the one the first 2 minutes,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was Chelsea. Even before the game, it was Chelsea all day for me. They seem to have this record at Stoke of beating them all the time. And I didn't think anything different on Saturday, to be fair.
Well, let's go back to Alvaro Morata because, you know, as you said, he has settled in well.
Yeah.
And his hat-trick for Chelsea has left the fans asking Diego who, funny enough. Now, the forgotten man, Diego Costa, has got his way eventually and will be rejoining his beloved Atletico Madrid in January in their new stadium. I'm going to put this question to both of you, obviously. Is it fair to say now that Chelsea can cope without Costa now that Morata has hit the ground running? Rod?
Well, he started off with a lot. Like Jan said, I was having a bit of banter on Twitter with Frank Sinclair because he loves the Blues, doesn't he? So
yeah,
he was. It's when it gets to November, December, his experience not on his toes. You know, these different places you've got to go to in the cold, and it's nice now in the summer. It's not really warm here, but it's not freezing cold. The elements. Different places. It's going to be difficult for him, but like Jan said, he started really, really well. And you can see he's a class player. And his goal scoring record at Real Madrid was not bad either. So, you know, he started off well. But can he replace Costa? He started off well, but that's going to be tough.
What about you?
I think in certain games he can. I mean, the biggest test he had so far was Arsenal, right? And probably Tottenham away. Tottenham away off poor. Arsenal at home, I don't think he had a good game either. So the kind of two best defences he's played against so far has failed. Well, Costa, even if he has a bad game, he will rattle you, he will annoy you, he will do something to you know, distract you or divert the attention away from the game and make it like a personal battle. I don't know if Morata's got that physical element about him where Costa does.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't need it because his movement is so good.
Yeah, his movement's good. But like I said, the two games so far, against Tottenham and Arsenal, for me, yeah, he didn't play well. That's
okay.
My opinion.
Okay, well, okay, let's flip it a bit. And Lukaku,
yes,
his goal-scoring record against the big clubs isn't great. Think about it. How many has he got past Liverpool, past Chelsea, past...
We're talking about his days at Everton.
Yeah, of course. Okay, but that's the only way we can judge him on, right?
Okay.
Morata didn't score against Spurs, even though he had a great chance early on in the game. He didn't score against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, Arsenal had a very, very good system there. So you can't really...
Yeah. I'm not saying it was his fault, but yeah.
And let's be 100% honest. If he gets 25 goals this season in the league. Let's say, for example, he gets 25 and 20 of those are against teams outside the top six. Does it really matter?
No, if Chelsea win the league, no. But if they don't, then yeah. Because your main man, for me, needs to perform in the big games. It's all good scoring the third goal against West Brom when you're 2-0 up, or you're getting two against Brighton away. Yeah, it adds to your tally. But when the game's tight, and you need your main striker to come up trumps, that's where you need your main striker for me. So he needs to chip in with, I don't know, 90th minute goal against Arsenal to win 1-0. That's where the striker excels for me. That's my personal opinion.
Rod, do you agree with him?
Yeah, totally. But if you know, if he doesn't score against the top ones and we win the league, then who cares? But if we don't, then yeah, because he didn't do well last year for Everton, I'm sure, against the top six. So I'm sure he'll do better this year because he's a bit better team, and you know he started on fire. So, but yeah, I totally agree with what Jan said. You know, he's got to be scoring and winning games in the big games.
Mm. All right. So what about Diego Costa then? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be firing on all cylinders at Atletico Madrid? Because we know that, you know, La Liga isn't fantastic defensively. Are we looking at another player that can get 25, 30 goals?
Different team.
Easily.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. If you went to Atletico Madrid now, yeah. Because it's like his second home, isn't it? So, and with Griezmann up there, yeah, I think he'll at least get 20-odd goals, yeah. Because...
I don't think so.
He's fought to go back there. He must want to be there. It's not as difficult as the Premier League.
Chelsea play a more attacking style of football in the Premiership than Atletico play. Atletico are a very, very defensive side.
Really?
Yeah.
Lately, I don't think so.
No, I do. I think he's got this Argentinian mentality of, you know, we defend and we counter-attack. That's how Atletico play.
I don't know. This season, I think they're more.
I disagree with that. I think they're just a well organized unit, but I don't.
Yeah, they're an organized defensive unit for me. They, you know, they know how to hit. You know, players like, you know, Griezmann and Carrasco, they hit teams on the break.
Mm.
When Atletico go at teams, they're not great. They're good when they sit back, absorb pressure, and hit teams on the break. That's where Atletico are the most. When their game plan suits them. Listen, Costa's a brilliant striker. He's going to score goals wherever he goes. Is he going to get 30 goals? Not for me. I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so from one world-class striker to one supposed world-class striker, depending on which part of the universe or depending on which part of the galaxy you come from. Rod, Leicester were a Jamie Vardy penalty away from a draw against Liverpool, which would have added to the 20 points Liverpool have lost from winning positions since the start of last season. That being said, the scoreline didn't really reflect the performance. I mean, Liverpool had more chances but were wasteful in front of goal. Game should have been over at 3-1, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should. You know, they're fantastic, Liverpool, going forward. But like we've said before, they just need to shore up defensively. Even Jordan Henderson, as a holding midfielder, he goes missing sometimes as well. They got Chan goes flying wherever he needs to go. Attacking wise, they're brilliant. If they can get themselves sorted at the back, then there'd be definitely shouts for the title. But I just don't think they've got enough at the back.
Yeah, I know. Tony Evans said last week on our show that Klopp doesn't really believe in defensive training. I think he walked out of a press conference yesterday, didn't he? Yeah. Because someone kept on talking about his defensive tactics and whatnot. He just said this is getting boring and walked out. I mean,
it's refreshing, and he might have the mentality, okay, you score two, we score three. Then it's fantastic to watch, but I just can't see you winning leagues like that. You just, you know, usually and statistically, the best defensive team wins the league.
Yeah, but we had that with Spurs in 94, didn't we? We had it with Dumitrescu, with Anderson, with Sheringham, with Klinsmann. Well, you know, when Ozzy Ardiles was at the helm. It's like, we're going to score four and you score three. It doesn't matter because we're going to win these games. And what happened? They ended up, what, mid-table?
Well, it just shows, isn't it?
And they got Champions League to contend with. I mean, let's be honest. We'll go into the Champions League in a bit. But the games are going to come thick and fast. And I know Mane is going to be back from his suspension and whatnot, but... I'm sorry, Liverpool fans are going to slate me for this, but as good as they are going forward defensively, they are a laughing stock. Mm. I'm sorry, you know, what happened at the weekend happened, but if Vardy wasn't up his own backside and thought that I'm going to put it down the middle, which he always does, let's be honest, if you placed it in the corner, sure. Then what? Then what do you say about Jurgen Klopp? Then what do you say about Liverpool's defensive line? What?
The keeper tonight as well was very suspect.
The free kick.
That went top in.
No.
He could have saved that.
It was literally the goal.
I said this about Carrez and I got slated.
But if you look in the wall as the ball goes in, you can see players looking at him as if to say, we don't trust you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could tell
see it. Jordan Henderson as if to say, I could save that.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. You hear the pundits on television say, well, you know, if the back line aren't confident in their own abilities, then it makes the goalkeeper feel shaky and vice versa. Well, something's got to be done, surely, in terms of a cohesive unit. Are they not doing the defensive training together? I don't understand how.
Still, the manager doesn't trust his goalkeepers, let alone his players. He doesn't know who to play.
But if he doesn't trust his goalkeepers, why is he interchanging them? Why is he playing one in the Champions League? If the Champions League is a tournament where they feel that they can compete in, why are you playing your second choice goalkeeper in it?
Mignolet,
it doesn't make sense.
Is Liverpool's best goalkeeper, and that's it.
Well, yeah. So why isn't he playing in the Champions League? Why isn't he playing every game?
I guess he bought Harris, didn't he? So he's got to make a point and say, listen, I've got to give this
player
a chance.
Okay, so effectively Klopp is playing Harris so it doesn't damage his ego.
I'd say so, yeah. I think Harris is gone in the summer.
Okay, if that's the case, then why is he playing Lovren instead of Clavin? Because they're just as bad as each other. What, because Lovren came in at 20 million?
There you go. Clavin was a free signing.
Why doesn't he play Milner at left back? Instead of Moreno.
A strange one. I'm going to agree with that because Milner had a good season at left-back last year and he didn't really do anything wrong for him not to play.
They bought the kid from Hull.
Yeah.
Why aren't you playing him in the Champions League?
Yeah.
Again, so this is what frustrates me. I'm not even a Liverpool fan, but when I saw their lineup today, I'm thinking, okay, going forward is fantastic. You've got Salah, Firmino, Mane, Coutinho. It's fantastic. And you've got Henderson and Chan doing what they've got to do. But then again, why are you chopping and changing defensively? It's another brand new back line. How can you get any consistency? How can you build a unit by constantly chopping and changing? Surely the logic is to play the same back five week in, week out, so they can develop
get a bit of consistency,
and an understanding.
No, I agree. I'm not disagreeing with that.
I can go, all dinosaur on you and say, look at the Arsenal back five with Keon Dixon, Winterburn, Adams, or even Steve Bolden and Tony Adams, David Seaman. They George Graham rarely chopped and changed. Ferguson rarely chopped and changed when he had Parker, Bruce, Pallister, and Owen. Mourinho rarely chopped and changed when he had Ferreira, Carvalho, Terry, and Cole. Wayne Bridge. So I cannot. I don't know. Here's me going off on one, and I don't really care too much about this. This is how Klopp frustrates me. Anyway, Lukaku, another goal for him, another clean sheet for United, but another unconvincing win. Are you concerned?
No.
You're still not concerned?
No.
I ask you this question every week in the hope that you say yes. Why are you not concerned? Did you not see the chances Southampton missed?
De Gea made one save from Redmond. Okay. That was the only save that he made the whole game.
Yeah, but that's because three or four of their chances were literally millimetres away from...
Ifs and buts. That was a title-winning performance.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You go away to Southampton, you play rubbish, and you grind out a 1-0 victory, and you walk away with 3 points. You're not... That's a solid performance. It wasn't a good performance. First half, United were okay.
It wasn't solid. Second half, if it was solid, then Southampton wouldn't have had chances. It wasn't solid at all.
Everybody's going to create a chance. In every game that you find a game, teams are going to create chances. Palace, look at Palace. Palace created 2-3 chances before City scored. If Palace take them chances, it's a different ballgame.
Let me tell you something. If he starts Gabbiadini up top with Long, that game is a draw.
Well, it's not, because Gabbiadini came on for the last 20 minutes.
For the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, touch the ball.
Doesn't matter, but it's for the last 20 minutes.
But Mourinho took off Mkhitaryan, brought on Smalling.
Who did he take off?
Mkhitaryan.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Cameron.
Went three out the back, notified Southampton's kind of whatever they wanted to do for the last 20 minutes. Did they create a lot? Not really. Yeah, they had the ball. United was solid.
No, because Southampton have another manager who is in one of those hipster fraud mentalities where, he's such a revolutionary, he's got new ideas, he doesn't have a plan B. What was his plan B? To throw on Charlie Austin?
Well, whatever he did, he tried. But what I'm saying is Mourinho notified what he had to do. And to be fair, United had a chance with Lukaku and Herrera to make it. So United had the clear chances to kill the game off. Southampton were attacking, they were huffing and puffing. Right. Yeah, they had the ball, but... They didn't.
Okay.
They weren't dangerous.
Okay. That being said, United had chances to kill the game, right? Yeah. But they didn't.
They didn't.
Right.
But what they did was became solid.
Uh huh.
Got the result that they needed and walked out with 3 points.
Okay. Well, if you're happy with that, then fine.
I'm happy with the result. I'm not happy with the performance, but that was the only time United were tested this season to get a result.
And they spoke.
Well, yes and no. They were 1-0 down. They're 2-1, 2-2. So. And United played better that day against Stoke than they did against Southampton.
Yeah,
but they didn't get the points.
Because they scored twice.
Yeah, but United scored twice.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. United played better because they scored twice.
No, not really. they played better because the football was a lot better. Mm. Southampton played better in the second half on Saturday, but didn't get a result. It's football.
Well, listen, I'm happy with the result, but I'm not happy at all with that performance. For me, there's still a lot needs to be done defensively. Southampton got in behind too many times, too easy. Romeo, what's he doing making runs from
that was from a corner. That was from a corner.
Really?
It was from a corner. Okay. I disagree. Mm-hmm. I think for the possession Southampton had in the second half, they didn't create a lot for me. Yeah, they looked like they were about to do something, but I thought United defended well.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move away from United, because I know Roddy will probably agree with this guy. Let's talk about Richarlison. New fella from Brazil, from Fluminense, joined Watford.
Yep.
Scored another last gas winner, this time against Swansea. He moved Watford up to sixth, which is a fantastic position at the moment. Mm-hmm. Good start to the season for Marcus Silverman, isn't it, gents? I mean, I thought Watford would be one of the teams to be battling for relegation.
So did Pat Nevin when we had him on the show, didn't we? Remember?
But then again, to be fair, that was before they signed Gray.
Gray.
And
before they signed him as well, wasn't
before
it?
Before they signed him, yeah. So, but to be fair, look, Marcus was working wonders again.
I think he's a good manager.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that he didn't go to Porto. Rod, what do you make of Marcus Silva so far and Watford?
Yeah, I was impressed. I was impressed with him at Hull, though, how he turned him around there. And I think he'd given a bit more time, he would have kept him up. So I was impressed with him. They've looked well since they started. And, you know, the surprise package, because some people had him to go down. And, you know, he's a good manager, him, and he's got him playing the right way. And he's, you know, even Dean, he's not even got on the score sheet yet. And
he's on the bench, won't play him.
Yeah, so they've got a good few results. So, yeah, he's a good manager, him. I like him. And he's got a good record as well.
That's right. It'll be a struggle for Watford to hold on to him. We've seen Watford sack managers. You know, they sacked Quique Sanchez Flores, sacked Matari. This guy, they ain't going to sack him because he's going to walk before they sack him. Mm. He's got high stock now. I think that if, say, Benitez leaves Newcastle, he'll be in line for that job.
He wouldn't want that job.
No, but what I'm saying is he's good enough to take a bigger job than that.
Everton.
What, instead of...
Koeman. I don't see Koeman.
Really?
Lost at Everton. I really don't. Nope.
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I think that result at the weekend, then beating Bournemouth and Nias coming on.
Nias, the player that he didn't want.
But let's be honest, he got two goals, didn't he?
He did get two goals. He didn't have a squad number last year. Didn't want to know. He was like...
He was at Hull.
Yeah, he was at Hull.
Who rejuvenated his career? Who changed his career?
I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Marcus Silva. There you go.
I know. Scored against us.
Yeah, it is. Indeed. Who didn't last season? Right. Let's talk about the Champions League, shall we? Because there were some games tonight. Liverpool, as we mentioned earlier, drew 1-1 at Spartak Moscow. Game went up to like 97, 98 minutes because a goalkeeper got an injury. Sturridge missed a chance at the end.
Should have scored.
Yeah.
Why is he not controlling it, putting it down and just bending it in the corner? It's gone for the spectacular volley. Yeah. Cost them 2 points.
Do you think they'll really rue that miss, because let's be honest, I mean, it's a group they should be getting out of.
It should be, but they've only got 2 points from two games. It's a bit worrying now, I think. I mean, where they got in the group, Maribor. It should beat Maribor. There's 6 points there, I guess. They'll beat Spartak Moscow at home, so it should be enough points there, I think, to qualify. Mm. They'll definitely qualify from that group. Probably them and Seville, I think, will probably go through.
Mm-hmm. And Man City made it a bit difficult for themselves, Rod. I think, to be honest, Shakhtar weren't really much in the game, to be fair. But 2-0 win, and they're going to get out of that group, aren't they?
Who's City?
Yeah, do it with their eyes.
I was watching Liverpool, so... But did he win 2-0?
Yeah, 2-0, yeah. I missed a pen as well.
Yeah, Liverpool will get through, but, you know, tonight's a good... When you come away from an away game in the Champions League with anything, it's a good result. So it's the home games they need to pick up on. And like Jan said, Maribor, with two games back to back, they should win that group comfortably, and I'm sure City will win the group as well.
Mm. And two results that made me smile for various reasons. Spurs destroyed Apoel Nicosia, and Real Madrid gave Borussia Dortmund a bit of a hiding as well.
Ronaldo with a double.
Yep, 410 goals in 400 games for Real Madrid. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not good enough, sell him.
It's not good. Douglas, was it? Diego Costa will score more than that. So, yeah, Apoel, we knew that Spurs were going to beat them even with a few players out. But to be fair, Apoel had a few chances in the second half.
Carlow had a brilliant chance from a corner, from a header that he should have scored as well.
Alaneftis had the chance.
Alaneftis had the chance as well.
Spurs look shaky.
They've impressed me, Apoel, in a silly kind of way. Listen, I'm not expecting a lot. You know, maybe I've got my separate hat on, being a bit biased. You know, I like to see them do well. But they went to the Bernabeu. 3-0 is a respectable result, whatever way you want to look at it. I guess with Tottenham's, the other few players missing tonight, they could have done a little bit better. But listen, Tottenham's class is always going to be better than Apoel. So the result doesn't surprise me. But I don't know, they're doing us proud, I think.
Mm. There you go. And Real Madrid, Rodri, I don't think anyone can doubt that they're going to be favourites for the competition. Two more for Ronaldo. Another goal by Bale as well. Fantastic half. Well, it was actually a volley, wasn't it?
Volley.
On a side foot volley. What do you make of Dortmund anyway, mate? Because they're top of the Bundesliga at the moment. I think Bayern Munich are in transition, which is probably the reason why Dortmund seems to be walking away with the title so far. But what do you think of their chances now to get out of the group? Because they've lost two games on the bounce. They're going to get 6 points against the Cypriot side. Let's be brutally honest. But is there a lot of hype about Dortmund, mate? Rod has gone silent. We cannot hear Rodri.
Aye. To be honest with me, I haven't seen much of him. But to be top of the league, and you know, I know Bayern Munich going through a bit of transition, but you know, it's still early yet. And like you say, they're going to get 6 points in the next two games. It's just a potluck that Tottenham have got Real Madrid back to back. It's a bit unlucky, but you know, I still think Tottenham will come second and Dortmund will still come third, though.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's going to be difficult for Tottenham to go away there and get a result, it'll be very difficult.
That's right. That's right. Well, Napoli.
It's a great atmosphere there. It gets it jumping, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I agree. Napoli got a good win against Feyenoord. Feyenoord haven't started well. Surprise, surprise.
Another in the lead, another in the Champions League.
Yeah, but two defensive mistakes. And the thing that impresses me most about Napoli, again, they're another one of these sides where, you know, you've got Sarri, who is very much a hyped manager who hasn't really won anything. Same with Bielsa. That's another story. But what impressed me most about Napoli is that they are constantly pressing.
They're attacking sides.
Yeah.
They press and they attack with the wings. They've got some good players in Napoli.
Mertens.
Insigne.
Callejon.
Callejon's done really well since he's gone to Napoli. They've got Milik up front as well.
He's an injured now.
Yeah, he's back now.
You back?
Yeah, he's back now. They're just a good attacking side. And they play Mertens up front as well. Yeah. They've kind of converted them into a centre-forward. And he's scoring goals. I like watching them. They're a good side.
The thing is, with Feyenoord, they had a penalty. Was it 1-0 or was it 2-0 they had a penalty? Which was saved by Pepe Reina. But the thing is, they just hit the self-destruct button again. And two of the Napoli goals were just by defensive lapses. Just lapse in concentration, bad back passes, and that's it. And I guess
at this level, you get punished.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Look, they had the fairy tale season last year. Mm. They won the Eredivisie and
first time in a few years.
God knows how long. Yeah. Mm. And you know, obviously Van Bronckhorst has built himself up a bit of a reputation, but I'm a bit concerned for him in the sense that he may end up like De Boer. You know, another manager that will end up elsewhere and fail. So I think he'll probably stay at Feyenoord for as long as he possibly can.
He's a legend there as well.
He is. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Beşiktaş, who we'll go on to in just a moment, got a good result against Red Bull Leipzig. Ricardo Quaresma, does he have the best outside of the right foot pass in the world?
Yes.
It's just ridiculous. He never uses his right foot. No. His left foot. He's just right foot.
He's done it from a very young age when he first started his career. Yeah. Everyone was like, what's he doing? But like you said, I like Beşiktaş as a team.
Mm.
They're another attacker. They've invested really well. They've got Medel, got Pepe. Ryan Babel scoring goals for them. Negredo. Good side. And you can't go to Turkey with that atmosphere. And, you know, it's like a goal itself, a head start for teams going there. So they're one to watch.
Mm.
They're one to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And perhaps, I wouldn't say the shock of the night, but Monaco? A good result. Yeah, Porto beating Monaco. It's Monaco's first loss at home in the Champions League for, I believe, 17 years. And that third Porto goal had FIFA 18 or FIFA 17 written all over it. It was just...
shambles, wasn't it?
It was a goal mouth scramble. We never see those anymore, but there you go. Perfect. Just watch that goal, Roz.
Second one was like that, no? Yeah. And Abubakar scored, yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. But, Roz, if you get the chance to see the Porto goals tonight, the third one is goal mouth scramble. That's something that you'd see in, I don't know, Evo Stick Premier League.
Or Pro Evolution.
I'll watch it later after I've finished.
You'll remember us by that. Goal of the week, yeah. Let's go on to our another news section. And as I mentioned, Beşiktaş, they played Fenerbahce over the weekend, and five players were sent off in Fenerbahce's 2-1 win in the Istanbul derby. Kuresma, Hutchison and Ozykup saw red for Beşiktaş, while Novo Neto and Koybashi of Fener received their marching orders too. Oddly enough, none of the decisions had anything to do with fighting, as many would suspect. Only one was actually for dangerous play. Now, you and I'm sure you've seen the game or the highlights. The red card count actually isn't a fair reflection on the game. Yeah, it wasn't a fiery derby. In fact, had it not been for a card-happy referee who made many questionable decisions, might I add, I doubt there would have been many incidents to discuss.
Was it 13 yellow cards?
Something like that,
13 yellow cards, 5 red cards. But it wasn't that kind of game. It's silly to say, isn't it? I think this is where referees don't understand the game. For me personally, the rules of football doesn't help the referees. In a game like this, it's hostile. It's passionate. It's so tense that you're going to tackle. The fans won't let you do anything else. They want you to tackle. They want you to kick, you know, and referees need to understand the importance of it. Listen, I'm not saying go around kick players and you're not going to get booked. But because it's so fiery, I think what referees try and do in games like these, it's stamp the authority quickly. First tackle goes in, yellow card. Oh, look, it shows like an example for everybody else to do that. It doesn't infuriate the players even more. They lose respect out the referee. The referee, for me, needs to, I know I keep saying it, but he needs to understand the players, the fans, the managers. And he lost the plot on Saturday. He looked like he was card happy. He was happy to book everyone, send everyone off, thinking
he lost control.
Well, that's the thing. Once you lose control in a derby game like that, as hostile and as it is, you're in trouble. And you saw what happened. 5 red cards in a football game is ridiculous.
Yeah. The thing is, it's the manner in which he handed out these cards. One of them was a red card because the player was through on goal. But when you watch it again, he got no support from his linesman or his assistant referee, because there was another player coming.
Probably too scared to make a decision.
Yeah, exactly. But this was sending off a Fenerbahce player at Fenerbahce's ground, so he had the balls to do that. Yeah. But I think he did it to even it up because he got the first red card wrong in the first place. Yeah. You know, it just seemed that he was just too busy worried about, oh, I've got to book this one. Because in his mind, he was probably thinking, well, if I book this one or send this one off,
the others won't do it or won't tackle or whatever. It doesn't infuriate players even more.
But, you know, a lot of the yellows were just... he could have just let them go because there was nothing in them. But he gave a penalty, which Janssen scored. Surprise, surprise. Ex-Tottenham player continuing what he did at Spurs, only scoring from the spot. You know, the handball was just... the guy couldn't get out of the way of it. He just couldn't get out of the way. And he's given him a second yellow for it as well. And you're sitting thinking, okay, we give our record stick. But this is taking the mic, honestly. It's
really... no, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, well. Only in Turkey, eh? Right, another bit of information, a bit of news. Spanish publication El País claims Edinson Cavani was offered and turned down €1 million to pass on penalty duties to teammate Neymar. A reconciliation dinner, allegedly organised by Dani Alves, was compared to a funeral. Now, further reports claim that while most players back Cavani, PSG must bow to Neymar's demands. Now, incidentally, most of the players that backed Cavani are actually on the transfer list, mind. I'm going to put this to both of you, actually. Can you think of any other time something like this has happened at any club? Rod, has any players been offered money?
No, it doesn't come to mind. I don't think any club's invested so much into a player that they've got to go with him. You know, they've invested how much? Nearly £200 million, and you know, he seems like a bit of a kid the way he's gone about. We talked about it last week or a couple of weeks ago. It's, you know, obviously Cavani's going to be on his way out, so it's just a sad situation. I can't remember anything like this ever happening before.
It's the manager's fault.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, before you know, even at amateur football, whatever level you play at, the manager says, still, you're taking the penalties today. Rodri's taking the corners. Everybody knows their job. So why is that not set up before the game?
We spoke about this last week. You know? And he even said, oh, they're going to sort it out between themselves. Well, evidently, they're not able to do something like that. This is the thing. Apparently, the PSG owner is literally pulling his hair out because he can't understand why Cavani turned down €1 million. But maybe Cavani doesn't care about the money and he's doing it out of principle because of what happened at the weekend. Because let's be 100% honest, he wanted to take the penalty. He had Dani Alves getting involved for what I don't even know.
Brazil is going to back his...
I know, but yeah, you know. This is silly. This is on the pitch
it's
politics.
It's childish. Yeah.
It is. And, you know, I stand with Cavani, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, je suis Cavani. Because, let's be honest, if he's the allocated penalty taker, why are you going to hand the ball to someone because what?
Oh, there you go. You've £200 million gone. You go and take it.
No, okay, yeah. I know he missed and made himself look like a complete idiot, but
he's the penalty taker.
Yeah.
What Neymar has done and his teammates have caused Cavani possibly to miss it by putting more pressure on it. That's not fair. He's a designated penalty taker. And the thing with Cavani, he had Zlatan there, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he was at the shadow of Zlatan. Now he thought, by Zlatan going, I'm the main man. And now Neymar comes in. He's probably thinking, he's probably thinking, I need to go now.
Yeah.
The only incident I can remember, do you remember when Di Canio and Frank Lampard had the little tiff at West Ham?
Yes.
About the penalty. That's yeah. Right. You know, I don't know if Lampard was offered any money back then. But that was the only time.
He scored that one, though, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He did. But that's kind of the only time that you know, it happens all the time with players where, you know, it free kicks penalties and I know I'm going to take it, takes the ball off him, or you score the penalty, won't go and celebrate with him. But
it's starting to happen a lot more. It's all about egos now and big egos. If Cavani's the penalty taker, why is Neymar asking him to take the penalty? Yeah. He's the penalty taker. It's his ego. I want to score, whatever. I have not scored. But you know, he's one of them people, you get beat 5-1, but it's okay because he scored the one. He's one of them people, so, you know, it's a sad situation. But like I said before, when you've invested so much money, then there's only one winner.
Yeah, there's probably some hipster moron on social media saying, oh, it's their competitive nature. That's why they want to take penalties, because they're so competitive and they're winners and, you know, they all want to get...
No. That's not being a winner.
No. No, it's not.
No, in any dressing room or any team that I played for, it's always been up on the board or you've been told, you take the free kicks, you take the penalties. If someone comes off, then he's taking them. So it's all organised. To let it sort out between yourselves, it just causes anarchy on the pitch and it just becomes an embarrassment.
I don't think the manager's strong enough to deal with it either. I don't think he's strong enough to tell Neymar, Cavani's my penalty taker.
It's the same thing that we were talking about with the ref there. You know, I used to say it to my young players, if you've not got a strong referee, you know, sometimes you get bad players, sometimes you get bad coach, sometimes you get bad referees. This, the manager at PSG, he's just not strong enough to deal with them kind of players. I'm sorry, he's not.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know my stance on that. I'm not a big fan.
If an Angelotti was still there, then this wouldn't be happening.
Not at all. To be honest, if Ancelotti was there, do you think Neymar would be a Paris Saint-Germain player? Do you think he would?
I think the owners bought him, so I don't think Ancelotti had any say. Who comes in when he's with these teams? I just think, you know, he's the manager. There's your big pot of gold. Get on with your job.
I don't think Laurent
will bring the players in
either. I think he's a strong manager, Laurent. Yeah,
Blanc doesn't take any.
He doesn't take any prisoners. No, I don't think he would have accepted it either. I just think. No, I don't know. They drew out the weekend as well, so good.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Do you think Mourinho would you think it would have happened? Mourinho, Conte, it wouldn't have happened with these top managers.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But everything's set out. Everyone knows the job and knows what to do.
I tell you what, Rodri, this might sound silly, but don't be surprised if there's a clause somewhere in Neymar's contract saying he's got to take pens. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, he takes my corners and my free kicks and my. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, no.
But if it is, then it should have come downstairs to the manager on no certain terms. Does anyone take the penalties apart from Neymar? And then it doesn't cause that problem. But then that causes problem in the dressing room with, right, you're off penalties, he's on them. Why?
I think he's going to go.
Cavani's an experienced £50 million international. Why are you taking me off? Because, you know, so that'll cause a problem in the dressing room, which could become a bigger issue.
The thing is, Rod, you know when they say, you know, there's a team that's got a star man and they should build their team around him. With Neymar, as good as he is in terms of his ability, you know, his goal scoring, his skill, everything, it's just that mentality, that petulance, that arrogance, that
childishness.
It just makes you think, well, how can you build a team around this guy? Because regardless how good he is, again, his ability-wise, where's the charisma? Where's that thing that makes you think, yeah, I want to play, you know, to this guy's strengths? How is that going to work?
Like before, it's all about egos, you know. It's all about, you know, hanging about with supermodels and Lewis Hamilton. And it's not about knuckling down and doing the right things. Ronaldo doesn't drink, doesn't see now in nightclubs. You know, you've got to do the right things. And then that'll lay itself on the pitch. I don't see him as a great footballer. I don't see him as that talisman as Ronaldo or Messi. He's a good player, don't get me wrong, and he's a class player, but he's not a team that you can actually build around for me. I just think he's just not that good enough.
You know the old cliche that no player's bigger than the club? He is at PSG.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, which is an issue. The biggest person at the club should be the manager.
That's right. They just thought it's Neymar.
Yeah. And see, this is the thing. His bodyguard, Dani Alves, ain't going to be around for too long. So, what happens next? Are they going to, I don't know, get Adriano to come out of retirement?
it's an issue that it's just like the Terry Sheringham and Nicole issue. That it's started now, and they won't speak or they'll fall out. But they'll, you know, if they're good professionals, they'll get on the job and do what they're paid to do. But we'll just have to wait and see if that happens.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's in Paris. It's not here. It's not affecting us, I guess. Right, Steve Parish. He came under a lot of criticism for sacking Ronald de Boer after 4 games. But imagine how much stick he'd receive if the Dutchman was relieved of his duties after 2 games. Spare a thought for Belgian coach Jackie Matheson, who lost his job at Greek club Larissa after a whopping 11 days in charge. Now, incidentally, Matheson was actually the second head coach of the season after he replaced Dutchman Andre Pauws. Gents, is it about time FIFA kind of changed the rules when it comes to managerial changes? I mean, should there be, like, I don't know, maybe a minimum length of time a head coach can be in charge for?
I'm surprised it lasted 11 days in Greece, to be honest. I'm quite surprised.
You know? When I read that, I was like, this just does not surprise me.
No, that's not me. It's not a shock to me. I've seen managers get sacked kind of less time than that. But, no, not really so, to your answer to your question. At the end of the day, this might sound really silly, but a manager's got a contract. If he's getting sacked after 11 days, he's getting paid his contract, isn't he? So from a manager's point of view, if you're going to sack me after 11 days, you've got to pay me out to sack me. So, you know, I guess the reputation is not great because, you know, they've hired the manager and they've sacked him after 11 days. But I guess an owner is there to do what, I guess he thinks it's best for his club. And if he feels that he's made the wrong choice, even if it's that early, I guess he's got the right to dismiss him.
Well, he had 2 games. He got a loss and a draw.
But you don't know you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. You know, we always judge managers with what we see on the pitch.
Mm.
You don't know if he's upsetting the tea ladies. You don't know if he's upsetting the whole staff. If he's had an argument with the owner, if he's telling him, listen, spend your money while I'm going. Go on then. You don't know what happens behind the scenes. We always judge them on the football side of it. But behind the scenes, anything could happen. They can have
it's a bit like the Ronald de Boer situation. If you read between the lines, the way Steve Parish talks, he didn't seem to get on with him as well. So, you know, there was no communication between him. If there was, it wasn't very well. And some players are bitching to him. And it might be the same situation, but 2 games is... But like Jan says, if you're smart and you're a manager and you get your contract correct and you get a good payout if you get released in a daft amount of time, then you should be compensated. But it's down to the manager to sort his contract and get the adequate funds that he can get if they do get sacked.
Well, I personally think that there should be some kind of rule or law that states that a manager needs to stay a certain length of time, whether it be 3 months or 4 months or maybe like half a season for the transfer window to open. Because We've seen it happen so many times where a manager will come in, like we said, 11 days. I mean, Bielsa was at Lazio for 2 days and he quit. What is that about? Surely, when a manager is approached, he will do his homework on the club. He will maybe turn up at the club and speak to the representatives or speak to the chairman. And I'm just thinking, when these managers meet up with chairman, do they think, okay, well, I want to know how much I'm getting paid before you tell me your objectives? Because as you said, we don't know what happens in the background. Perhaps he joined the club and without asking how much I'm going to get for my budget, what's my transfer budget, what are my targets, what are my aims for the season? We don't know. Are these questions asked? Are these managers?
You'd like to think so, though,
yeah, but I'd like to think that managers ask these questions before they get the job. I'd like to think they're agents. For me, it just smacks of just really, really bad decision making from everyone around. Let's be 100% honest. The club may not have to pay out anything because perhaps there's a clause or maybe some kind of agreement where the manager had to abide by or adhere to certain rules. I don't know. I really don't know. But if he's been in charge for two games, he's lost one and drawn one, it's hardly disastrous, is it? Especially at this stage of the season. For me, it doesn't make sense. I mean, look how many managers have been sacked this season already or left. I mean, John Sheridan left. I think
De Boer,
Michael Brown at Port Vale left. And this, I'm just reading now, Fran Escriba has been dismissed by Villarreal. Now, they lost 4-0 to Getafe at the weekend. Funny enough, his previous job was at Getafe, and they lost to Villarreal, which actually got him sacked. So it's gone like full circle for him. So I don't know. Yes, we've seen these success stories where clubs have sacked managers halfway through the season or three quarters of the way or even a quarter of the way of the season, and they brought in someone new and it's rejuvenated them, the new manager bounce like we saw with Sam Allardyce. But 11 days in charge.
I don't agree with what you said, Oscar. I don't think you can have a clause to say a manager should be there half a season or whatever else. I don't agree with that personally.
Okay.
If you're losing week in, week out, and you really don't want the manager, he's playing the wrong players or wrong tactics, he ain't got a clue, you're not going to want that manager at your football club.
I agree. So, however, the blame must also fall on the shoulders of the players. Now, if the players know that he's here for at least half a season, right, they're going to have to pull a result out of their arse eventually, because let's be 100% honest. If at half the season, Crystal Palace, for example, haven't won a game, haven't scored a goal, haven't got any points on the board, it's not going to be De Boer's fault, is it? He's not on the pitch kicking the ball about.
Well, it just shows that the decision they made to sack him was, for me, the wrong one anyway. I think we all thought that at the time.
Okay, well, fine. Well, look, Hodgson's been in charge for two games. They've conceded six and
haven't scored.
So what's the difference?
That's what I mean.
What is the difference? But this is what I'm saying. If they say to a manager, right, if the law says a manager has to stay for at least half a season, right, at least you can gauge which players are the bad eggs. Because if they're not going to perform for one manager, what's to say they're going to perform for another one? This is what I'm saying. They've got no choice but to perform if the manager's there.
Because it's the relationship that they build with the manager that being there at the time. You could be the star man of a football team. I come in, I don't like you, I'm not going to play you. Fans might be unhappy about that. Why still not play? He's my best player. They might not want the manager instantly. Their owners might say, why are you dropping my best player? Don't like him. Don't fancy him.
How, yes, but
you know, that's where the bad eggs kind of.
No,
become,
I understand this, but my whole point is that what you're saying is correct, right? If that's the case, then surely that lands on the head of the board of directors, whoever makes the decision to bring in this manager, because they haven't done their due diligence. They haven't looked at their manager and said, right, he's a loose cannon, or he's not a strong enough character, or he is. When Crystal Palace brought in De Boer, the whole point was to change the philosophy and that kind of stuff, but that takes time. And obviously we know that the Premier League is an unforgiving league and you do not have time anymore. It's not the early 90s where you can give a manager 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. Even back then, Christian Gross came in, didn't get much time. So we've seen it happen in the past where managers come in, they're given 4 or 5 months, or like now, 4 or 5 games. And if they don't have magic dust and to change everything and to make them goal-scoring machines, then they're in trouble. So this is what I'm saying. If you put out a rule to the club and say, right, you have to have a manager for at least 6 months, or at least from August to January, he has to have a job. Because that way, if the club hasn't scored a goal or won a game or registered any points, then it is a really... Also you can point the finger at the players, because you can say, well, hang about, you haven't had 2 or 3 months. You've had 5 or 6, if that. Does that make sense?
I see where you're coming from. But sometimes players need different ideas. They need, if you, it's difficult.
Oh, hang about. Let me stop you there. So the board didn't have different ideas to Sam Allardyce?
Yeah, he did. I thought the sacking was harsh for me personally.
Right, but this is, but
I'm saying is, you know, you might not fancy the manager instantly, and you might, Man United with David Moyes, prime example. Yeah, he came in, he was at the biggest club in the world.
So he got practically a full season though.
The players didn't want him. He would have got sacked earlier if he won. The United fans were banners all over he would have gone a lot earlier if it wasn't for the fact that United don't sack their managers very quickly because we had Fergie for 26 years. He would have gone a lot earlier. The style of football was rubbish.
Okay, right.
His selections were rubbish. His football was rubbish. We fans weren't happy with him. Van Gaal was another one.
Okay, I'll tell you what then. Let me hold that thought for a second. Let me just jump in there for a second.
Yeah.
So if there was a clause or there was an agreement or a rule that said David Moyes had to stay until December.
Yeah.
Had to.
Yeah.
Right. But if the results weren't good enough, United could sack him.
Yeah.
Right. Would they have done it then?
No.
They wouldn't?
No, I don't think so. Because they gave him that time, didn't they?
Yeah, but they paid him out, didn't they?
Well, they did because it came to a point where United were losing to every big rival by 3-4-0.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah,
that's unacceptable by a club like United.
But this kind of rule would allow teams to turn around and say to Manchester, fine, we'll give you a six-year contract, but if that first phase of your career at the club isn't good enough, we can sack you and not pay you as much as what you'd be owed if you stayed for a year.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So it's not managers getting paid 10, 15 million quid like we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
And then they're happy to jump to another job and then they get sacked like, I don't know, someone like Andre Villas-Boas, who's effectively a guy that loves getting jobs just to get sacked.
It's a difficult one still because if you know a manager's there for a period of time, sometimes players might think, oh, he's got 2 months until his contract's done after 6 months. So let's all play rubbish and we can sack him. You know, you've got players that are unprofessional. You've got players that can do that. They all sit down in the dressing room together and go, listen, what are we going to do to get him out, but we're not show our true colours?
Yes. However, on the flip side, if you've got, again, like, so for example, with Crystal Palace, let's say they had De Boer until the end of December when the January transfer window opened, right?
Yeah.
And if Palace was sat bottom of the table with no points, no goals scored, right, who's to blame? Is it just the manager? Or is it those 11 players that are on the pitch or the 25 that are in the squad?
You've got to blame the players as well, because at the end of the day, it's the players that go out there to perform.
And if, as you say, the players discuss things off the field, right, then at what point are they going to turn around and say, right, hang about, it's January now, we've got to get our asses in gear, we've got another 18 games to go, or 19, however many games there is left to play for the season to end, we need to pull results out of our asses because we're going to get relegated and then everyone's going to be on our backs. So, When's this thing going to change?
But that's why I don't agree with it, because if it's got to a stage where we've played 19 games and Palace haven't won a game, you're going to want the manager gone long before then. You're not going to want to wait until a clause is there, because you want to change before it's too late. If they're bottom of the league with no points at that stage of the season, they're practically gone. So it doesn't matter if they're going to get anybody on, if they sack him or not. They're practically gone anyway. But for me, there's got to be enough... It's evidence enough to sack a manager. You can't sack him after four games because he ain't scored a goal and say, well, you know what, your philosophy's not working. Mm-hmm. That, for me, is harsh. But if you're 2 months, 3 months down the line where the players are like, listen, we're not players that fit this 3-4-3 system.
Yeah.
You know, it's not working. And don't forget, players will talk to the owners as well. What do you think of De Boer? You know, don't like him. Doesn't suit our style of football, you know. It murmurs around the club. And once you get bad feedback about the manager, then he's in trouble. For me, the players have got the biggest key. Once the manager comes in, you're either going to think, yeah, I'm going to play for him, or you don't give 100%. And inevitably, it's the manager that pays for it.
Mm. Well, tell me something. What do you feel about something like this? Do you think managers should have maybe a certain length of time where they can stay in the job before they can get sacked? Should the rule come in, or should we just leave it as it?
I understand what you're trying to say, still, but I just don't think it would ever happen. I just think it's too difficult. You know, it's like a manager might come in, like you say, like 3 months, he might not, two goals, no wins. So I can't never see that happening, to be honest. Like, well, I'd like it to see it happening, because, you know, then it gives the power to the manager a bit more. But, you know, these players these days, they're so temperamental. And, you know, like the De Boer situation, you know, basically the players got in the sack. So
yeah, surely...
possibly not on the field, possibly just like off the field by what they're saying. People, something's obviously gone on upstairs with asking players or what's going on with training and so on and whatnot. And, you know, they've obviously gone through that as well. So that's not.
Yeah, but surely a rule like this would put the ball back in the manager's, or should I say, the ball in the player's court, in the sense that, fair enough, they've lost their first four games, but they've got until December just to turn things round. And that way, at least the chairman can say, right, well, we've kept this manager in for this period of time. We've given him more than what we probably would have done if this rule wasn't in, but we can see what he's trying to do. And we can see that the players aren't receptive to his ideas or his philosophy. Sorry, I hate that word, philosophy.
If, for instance, if I'm bringing a chairman, like, say, for instance, like Ronald de Boer, you've got to give him... Like, if he stayed in till the end of Christmas, he will have more points than Roy Hodgson will get. I have no doubt about that. Because if you look the way they were playing... You know, it was different, but things like that take time, especially the way they were coached with Sam Allardyce. He's going to take a different journey, a totally different way of playing, and they've got to embrace that. And sometimes they hit the ground running, sometimes it takes a bit longer, and obviously it takes a bit longer, but you need to have trust in the people upstairs and not sack you after four games, and which you've done.
Yeah. The thing is, going back to De Boer, and I know we spoke about this in detail when it happened, but there's something that we didn't mention, that the poor pre-season that Crystal Palace had, you know, in terms of recruitment, in terms of like just results on the pitch, everything just didn't go right. The guy was from a hiding to nothing, and you know, we were talking before the show, and with Benteke being out, the only proven striker they have is Connor Wickham. That's all they've got now that Benteke's out. Mm. So if he'd have brought in maybe one or two strikers, even on loan, I think we could be talking about a completely different story, because at least they would have had options to bring on someone when they were chasing games at Huddersfield.
Did he sign anyone? He signed two. Was it Loftus-Cheek on loan and Mensah at United?
No, he also signed the Riederwald.
The defender from Ajax. The
defender from Ajax, yeah.
Sacco as well.
Not really much of a...
Well, no, it's not overwhelming, is it? You know, it's not overwhelming, and I just think it's, you know, again, going back to this manager sacked after 11 days. I mean, let's be honest, we're talking about the Greek league here, where, you know, teams like Olympiakos sack managers
because they pay for their jobs.
Yeah,
Getspire, they did that too, didn't they?
Well, they Getspire beat Olympiakos as a unity man. That's
right.
So they appointed him, and then they sacked him
because of outspite.
But was it Paulo Bento as well, the Portuguese manager? He was top of the league, and because they didn't win for like three games, I think they drew three games, they sacked him. That's they were like eight points clear or 9 points clear at the time.
That's right.
So this is bonkers. We've seen it happen before. I mean, we've spoken about managerial changes so many times. And, you know, is it the fact that money is just too much these days, and you know, it's too much of a risk to keep? I can understand the Premier League, whereby they've got to give managers only certain periods on because they're going to start panicking like they did with the ball. But then when you look at like Port Vale and Oldham Athletic, I mean...
Already.
Yeah. I don't know, but whatever. I guess this is something that maybe our listeners can debate and let us know what they think. I personally...
In an ideal world, as a manager, you'd expect your chairman or the people to back you, even through the tough sides, because you're going to get them in a season. It's just, you know, unfortunate some owners just panic and just get rid. You know, I don't agree with it, but you know, it's becoming fashionable now, isn't it, to get rid of the managers and just panic and then just sack your manager.
Yeah, well, look, you haven't been performing lately. You're gone. Season.
I'm surprised I lasted that long. No. Oh, no. Can I end it on a positive?
You
mate?
Can lend it on whichever note you want.
Did anyone see Marcelinho pull his hamstring?
You got heels.
Well, I forgot him today.
Marcelinho,
the Valencia manager. Pull a hamstring after their 3-2 victory.
Yeah,
anyone see? Yeah, it was hilarious.
What did he do?
He celebrated the goal and he pulled his hamstring. Valencia scored in the 88th minute against Sociedad.
Was it as funny as Chris Sutton getting the slide challenge?
That was brilliant. So
could have happened to a nicer guy. Yeah,
Chris Sutton. It's punditry.
Yes, let's shall we? Let's get into that. Right. I think we should end it there, shouldn't we? We've done pretty well. What do you reckon?
Shall I say my goodbye since I'm not coming back?
Say your goodbyes. Say you've been future endeavoured, as they say in other sports.
I'll be back next week.
All right. And we shall be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. What's your Twitter thing?
Yannickis J.
I'm very happy. You're very, how can I put it, vociferous on Twitter lately. You've been doing your bits for yourself and self-promoting all that.
Yeah, I try to.
You need to stop doing those modelling things with the sunglasses and all that kind of stuff.
Oh dear, I thought we passed that. Right, yeah. That's Rodri's favourite photo, isn't it? Isn't it, Rod?
Yeah.
That's going to go on a mug. I'm going to make a Shoot the Defence mug and have you...
The Cypriot model.
Cheers, bud. I know you've been sarcastic, but I'll take it.
Don't keep some old Kent Road shades on.
Hey, it's not that kind of shot, mate. Rod, what's your Twitter handle, mate?
Rod James Giggs.
Excellent. We'll be back soon, I hope, unless we get booted off here. Till next time, take care, everyone.